morning, everybody.
Good morning.
Welcome. I wanted to talk today about a teaching that actually is offered by several different awakened beings, and this one I'll base on the formulation that Dogen Zenji made of the eight awakenings of great beings. The eight awakenings of all those who follow this way reliably and live it fully and kind of mine it for all of its goodness. What we come to through a life of practice. There are a couple that are a little surprising. Part of the treasure that is the Buddhist teaching is it's a way of right living. It's not just a teaching. It's not just an intellectual exercise. It's not just a philosophy. It's a way of life, which means that every day we live at any situation, we can find guidance for any situation from the teachings, which is why we study. So we learn the range of teachings and all of their many forms, although they come down to some pretty simple principles, pretty simple insights. So when we live this way, when we awaken to our full and whole and complete life, as our in our own particular biographical course, huh? When we see clearly and receive the blessings of our entire life in all of their guises, we find that the real treasure of the Dharma is our very life. It's not found in books and texts. It's not found in the written teachings, but in our life itself, as we're living it, every moment, every situation, every state of mind and body. And we live it together. So that first orientation this morning, as we sat, we began our sit. Then we sit not just for ourselves, we sit for all beings. We live not just our own life, but we are living our life with all beings, the one life. And how I live it comes out of my understanding of who I am and what my life is all about. This is the Genjo Koan. This is the koan of everyday life. This is the basic orientation to looking into what is the truest, the truth that's coming forward right now, and what is my best response. So in this life of practice, when we are practitioners, when we really realize that there's no getting rid of the Buddhist practice, there's no turning away from it, once we have really been. It has seated itself in our heart and mind. We're always realizing something particular, something that I never realized before, something that I didn't see about myself or about a situation, about my expectations or my assumptions about things. And as the Sangha Jewel, we manifest the Sangha Jewel by how we conduct ourselves, how we're conducting ourselves and responding to this life, not only in our inmost place, our most intimate experience, but also how we are conducting ourselves within the group, our families, our workplaces, our communities. How we conduct ourselves in our inmost hearts. You know, an example of that is, are we always on our own case and involved in self-criticism? Or are in our inmost place, are we bearing sympathetic witness and encouraging ourselves to our best way of being, our truest way of being? how much choice can we exercise internally and externally in how we behave? So as a Sangha, how we get along together is how brightly or dimly we shine. As an individual, how I get along with myself is, and how much I realize this self is part of you, and this is benefited by your presence in my life, determines how brightly I shine or how dimly I shine. So we're always sharing our life. And what we bring to it is our own particularities, our own quirks and eccentricities. In this Zen way, we prescribe ways of behaving, ways of conducting the body in space, in the collective space. But where all of this leads us to is our own eccentricity. Realizing with full acceptance that nobody is like me. We are all alike, and yet all these little quirky things are peculiar to each of us. So what we bring is our peculiarities. We bring our foolishness. We bring our wisdom. We bring our ignorance, and we bring our insights. That's the whole mix that we are as a Sangha. We also bring our aspiration to be awake, to be kind, to be aware, sensitive, intelligent. This path begins in our lives when we realize that it is available. When we wake up to what the Tibetans have said is that the single most important moment in a life is the moment when you awaken to the possibility of enlightenment. When you awaken to the fact that you can be aware, and awareness can reveal the entire universe of choice and truth. The more aware we are, the more continually aware, the more we practice continual awareness, continual practice, which is why when we're sitting in Zazen, it doesn't matter whether you're steadily right here, but coming back and coming back whenever you drift away. That's the practice. We lose track, we come back. We lose track, we come back. It's all fine. But it's all going in the direction of, it's all kind of inspired by the aspiration to be right here all the time. Which allows us to live in our best way. So the great teacher Ahe Dogen, who is he's the person from which we trace the Soto Zen line. He lived from 1200 to 1253. So he wrote much. He was not a very well-known master at the time of his life. It's only in the last 50 years or so that we've come to appreciate the profound poetry of his realization and begin to be taught by it and receive it. And he wrote one of his fascicles in the Shobogenzo is the Eight Awakenings of Great Beings, in which he's taking up kind of the final appreciations of the Buddha as the Buddha died to this life, right? So as he entered his parinirvana, his continuous nirvana, a nirvana without end, complete and total awakening when he dropped the body, so no longer encumbered by concerns of the body. Whatever we make of that, whatever we make of that. So, the Eight Awakenings of Great Beings. The first one is having few desires. Having few desires. When Shohaku Okamura gave a talk on these awakenings, the thing that he went right to with this, having few desires, was accepting your karma, which is like brilliant. Because what is it, what can we, that's a heading under which we can put all of the things we're unhappy about, right? Is I don't want this, I don't want to be this way, I don't want it to happen this way. What I really want is when this happens, I can actually, right? All of that stuff is all under that heading of accepting our karma, accepting all the things that have come our way. And with comparing mind is so different from the way it happened for somebody else who seems so like, if only I was that person, if only I had had that experience, if only I had had a certain parent or a certain family, a certain level of wealth or whatever it is. All the ways that we express to ourselves the failings of our own karma. So when I heard that teaching, everything changed for me, because I realized, yeah, I was living continually regretting a number of the particulars of my own life. I was putting a lot of energy into that regret. And so what happened was when I decided to drop, wanting myself and my life to be different, I had a lot more energy. This whole idea of living with few desires, it's brilliant. What a relief in and of itself to let go. And it leads to all kinds of different mental processes. Like you realize you're jealous because somebody else got a new car. For instance, I don't know. It's like, oh wait, do I need a new car? Do I even need a car? Maybe I need to walk more anyway. applying this whole contemplation all the time, this whole reflection to, is this a desire that serves my awakening? So if we think of what is having few desires, is there anything wrong with desires? Well, no. But when we don't realize that they are a desire, that we feel separated from something, that's the inherent in having a desire, is we don't have it, right? We want it. But there are wholesome desires. The desire to be awake, the desire to be free from desires, endless desires of a material sort. It's wholesome. Wholesome in that it brings happiness, it brings ease, it brings peace. Any of these I can go into for a long time, but since there are eight of them, I'm going to just kind of introduce them and then move on to the next. So the next one is knowing how much is enough. And this is quite a wonderful one to work with. How much is enough? How much is enough? How much, in our practice, in a monastic practice, when we go do retreats at the monastery or we do them here, we do orioki, which means just enough. We eat using that ritual. So we have three bowls. They're not big bowls, they're little bowls. But altogether, between those three bowls, there's enough to just nourish the body and to keep the mind clear. If we eat too much, we gotta take a nap right away. The mind gets foggy. So everything in Zen practice is about, it encourages us to notice how much is enough. It doesn't take much to be enough. So all the ways that we look at that, how much food is enough, how much money is enough, how much exercise is enough, how many clothes are enough, how much love is enough, How much self-esteem is enough? That's an interesting one to work with. Or maybe how much self is enough? So maybe we know it's too much self when we are caught up in dissatisfaction. If we know that our life is complete, it's always complete, it's always enough, then dissatisfaction is telling us we're going beyond what's enough. We look at what is the sensation of enough. How does it feel when you know you've had enough? How does it feel in the body? How are you breathing when you've had enough? What are the emotions that come with the experience of enough, that signal enough? And then Dogen gives us a practice. He suggests, even if you already have something, you can set a limit for yourself for using it according to what's actually needed. So how much ice cream do you need of that quart in any one sitting, for instance? So we can all consider how our lives would change if we were to take up the practice of enough. And our Zen practice brings us to that. And that's one of the things that we work with. And also, what challenges us? What is our challenge with knowing what's enough? And what helps us know when enough is enough? The third awakening is to enjoy serenity. Now, you may begin to notice that each of these awakenings is a subset of the other awakenings. So one of the ways that Dogen reflects on this is that we have eight awakenings, which involves all other eight awakenings. So actually we have 64 awakenings. Or maybe we have 8 to the third power awakenings. We're constantly combining these. So enjoying serenity when you have enough, when you know how much is enough, and you are in alignment with it, you can enjoy serenity. Thich Nhat Hanh has said that this practice is all about cultivating contentment in the context of a civilization of discontent. Cultivating contentment. So how today will you allow yourself contentment, serenity? Dogen clarifies this even further in along with the Buddha. They say to enjoy serenity in seclusion in order to have the joy of serene non-doing. And then says, if you are bound by worldly matters, you will drown in troubles, just like an old elephant who's stuck in a swamp and cannot get out. So serenity in seclusion. Well, actually, serenity is a very secluded sensation. It's kind of part of the way we would describe serenity. We only experience serenity within our own heart. The American Heritage Dictionary, one of my favorite books, I love that book, says serenity, dignity, quiet, tranquil, clearness, and brightness. And those are all lovely descriptions of the quality of serenity. So how often do you experience that? What are the conditions that you hold are necessary for that, or is it an unconditioned state? Is it without conditions? Is it just innate in our Buddha hearts? Always right here. What about serenity in your meditation? That's another thing to look at. The fourth awakening is diligent effort. So many of these awakenings really challenge the culture that we live in. Diligent effort is something that used to be kind of a primary value culturally held, but now not so much. Now it's convenience and ease and a quick supply of whatever's needed. No waiting. Awakening to diligent effort. Not instant gratification. Actually, our practice is the embodiment of continual effort. Isn't it? There is no clear mind and heart without having a very clear commitment and a continual turning in that direction. This is great diligence is required as part of the way of living the bodhisattva life, living the Buddha self. Diligent effort. And he says, resolving that nothing is too difficult. It's like a thread of water piercing through a rock by constant dripping. If your mind continues to slacken, it's like taking a break from hitting stones before they spark. You can't get fire that way. What I'm speaking of is diligent effort. And that's true. That's why we meditate very, very regularly, and we bring ourselves back continually to right now, right here. So we get the spark of life into every moment of our ordinary lives. So that leads us right into the fifth awakening, which is not to neglect mindfulness, which is another way of saying maintaining right thought. Mindfulness helps us guard Dharma awareness so we don't lose it. So mindfulness is present moment awareness. It's non-judgmental awareness. And it includes everything. Nothing's left out. But it's not just paying attention. It's not just these things. It's actually mindfulness is based in the intention to be enlightened. Enlightened to the true life, the whole life of this moment. Dogen says, if you don't neglect mindfulness, then the robbers of desire cannot enter you. If mindfulness is continual, you will not be harmed, even if you go into the midst of the robbers of the five sense desires. It's like wearing armor and going into a battlefield, so there's nothing to be afraid of. And if we really have hit on how potent this practice is, that then no matter what states of mind come up, the only method we need to know is to be present and experience them. And then their impermanent nature reveals itself, because whatever the experience is happening right now, but in a short while is no longer happening. That includes lovely experiences, neutral experiences, and unbearable experiences. They all have their moment, and then they pass. Mindfulness, always bringing back our own vow to awaken, to be awake, to experience, to connect with our own experience, and not separate from it. The sixth awakening is to practice meditation and to develop stability in meditation, which is described this way. Your mind cannot be scattered Your mind cannot be scattered. There's a stability that is available. Like a well-roofed house or a well-built embankment, which helps you maintain the water of understanding and keep you from being drowned. So stability in meditation, practicing meditation, it comes out of having few desires, not neglecting mindfulness, enjoying serenity. See, they all kind of mix and match and feed back into each other. The seventh is to cultivate wisdom, how things really are, and have appropriate response to how things are. To listen, contemplate, practice, and realize the Dharma truths. He says, if you do this, you are freed from greed. You will always reflect on yourself and avoid mistakes. Well, maybe not always, but more. So here are some images that he offers for cultivating wisdom, living according to the wise, living the wise way. Dharma is a reliable vessel to bring you across the ocean of sickness, old age, and death. And a number of us who are pretty old in this group often say, wow, I don't know what I would do if it weren't for Dharma, because being old, getting older is an incredibly robust practice of accepting, coming into accord with all kinds of conditions with serenity, or aspiring to it, the idea of it. Then it's a Dharma, a bright lamp that dispels ignorance, excellent medicine for what ails you, a sharp axe to cut down the tree of delusion. Quite so. So, now, can you guess what the eighth awakening is? Anybody? Give it a try.
I'm muttering, not guessing.
Oh.
Compassion.
Compassion?
Compassion, that's what I think. Compassion comes after wisdom.
The eighth is not to engage in hollow discussions.
See, that's Dogen. Dogen wouldn't say compassion.
Excellent. And actually, often, it's been my experience, and other people say to me, you know, I have less and less interest in the kind of the kind of conversation that I used to spend all my time in. And part of it is you realize the nature of so many of our concerns is addressed by practice. So rather than commiserating, we see into the nature of it and have compassion, have patience. So he says, we free ourselves from discriminatory thinking. Hollow discussion scatters the mind. So that means, that takes in this whole thing about not believing our opinions, or not being ignorant about the nature of opinions. It really scatters the mind, scatters the heart. When I fall into, and I do this all the time, political conversations, well, I'm joining with great gusto whoever I'm talking with, right? I mean, that feels good. But actually, I'm stirring up all kinds of dissatisfaction and misery that does not lead to relief from suffering. I mean, it's one thing to discriminate, to discern. So if the conversation leads to, okay, so what can we do about this? And there are times when that we can. And say, okay, what do I need to do? You know, so part of my my what comes out of me when I'm really going like, ain't it awful, constantly, is I need to be more actively engaged in a way that's adding to going in a direction that seems more beneficial. For instance, right? So not engaging in hollow discussions, not engaging in gossip about other people, things that create division, separation, and misery, and harmful outcomes. So looking at all of the ways that the awakenings rest on each other, really appreciating how they all are a big soup of Dharma wisdom and Dharma guidance.
It's almost 20 minutes before 12.
Yes, I know I'm going over. I'm going to go over a little bit more. I want to share something that very often at the end of a day at retreat we chant, and it's done very dramatically. All the lights are turned off, and a person at the door of the zendo, this is at the monastery, chants this, and then as the last line comes along, they run away down the hall, so the voice absolutely fades out. So here it is. Life and death, they say, life and death are of supreme importance. Time swiftly passes by and opportunity is lost. Each of us should strive to awaken. Awaken. Take heed. Do not squander your life. It's a good one.
That's extremely potent the first time you hear that.
Every
just
time.
It sort of stops you physically and mentally when you hear it. It's amazing.
Yeah. Well, it's trying to get our attention if we're not paying attention. How rare it is to encounter these teachings. What an opportunity to be in circumstances that allows us to practice. And then adds to that companionship and practice and teachings. So let us not squander our blessings, but live these realizations in all of our daily comings and goings and beings. Thank you.
Page 5 of your chant book.
Great Bodhisattva vow.